everyone. Thanks for joining us on this month's Summer Meals Matter call. This is Clarissa Hayes at the Food Research and Action Center. The Summer Meals Matter call series is held the first Thursday of every month and covers a different topic around the expansion and improvement of the summer meal program. And on today's call, we are going to be covering making breakfast work in the summer. So we've all heard the saying that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and that remains true even during the summer. So serving two meals a day during the summer, whether it's breakfast and lunch or breakfast and supper, can help sponsors run more financially viable programs and also meet the nutritional needs of the children they serve. It can take a little bit more work to ensure it's successful, and our three speakers joining us today will share their insight on how to make it work. And for the first time, we here at FRAC recently released a companion piece to our annual Summer Nutrition Report that measures summer breakfast participation against summer lunch. And the report found that 1.7 million low-income children received summer breakfast on an average weekday in July 2015, which is just barely half as many who ate summer lunch. So we know there's a lot of work to be done to expand participation in summer breakfast. So the report highlights best practices to increase summer breakfast participation and then also sets an ambitious but we think achievable goal of reaching 70 children with summer breakfast for every 100 that participate in summer lunch during the summer. So we will definitely include a link to the report after today's call, so I won't cover everything in the report, but I did want to touch on just a few of the best practices and models that we featured. So of course, the first and easiest step to increase participation in breakfast is to incorporate breakfast into existing summer meal sites that are serving lunch or supper. So if you're on the call and you're already serving a meal, kind of take a look at your program and see whether you can add breakfast as well. Another best practice that we found talking to sponsors is providing breakfast on weekends. So as we know, the summer nutrition programs provide federal funding for meals served at sites on any day of the week, including those served on weekends and holidays. So youth-serving and faith-based organizations often run programming on weekends, so this can be kind of an easy way to begin breakfast expansion. And then one of the most important strategies for increasing breakfast participation we found through our interviews is just the importance of maximizing the economy of scale. So we know that operating cost-effective summer nutrition programs is an important part of expanding their reach. By serving two meals, sponsors increase the number of meals reimbursed and then create a better economy of scale that sets programs up for success. And one thing that we heard from sponsors is just the practice of dropping off lunch or supper with breakfast for the next day can be an easy way to do that. And then last one I'll touch on very briefly, because I know everyone's going to check out the report after this call, is just serving a breakfast instead of a morning snack. So serving breakfast instead of a morning snack provides children additional food, and then going back to the last point, it just better supports the viability of the program because sites or sponsors are getting a greater reimbursement. And then many sites that serve breakfast early in the morning report low participation, but what we've heard from sponsors is just pushing it back a little bit, maybe from 7 or 8 to 10 to 11, can be a really effective way to increase breakfast participation. I know as a kid, it was hard to get me out of bed in the morning, so that's definitely something that we've heard being successful. And then the report also includes state data and analysis, so it's a great resource for making the case for breakfast expansion in your community, so definitely check that out. All right, I think that's enough for me. With that being said, I'm going to introduce our presenters who will share ways to make breakfast work in the summer. So our first speaker today is Caroline Cook. Caroline is a registered dietitian, and she works at the Connecticut State Department of Education as a summer meals coordinator, overseeing the Summer Food Service Program and the Seamless Summer option of the National School Lunch Program. She has held this position for 2 years. All right, Caroline, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Clarissa. I am so excited to be invited to talk just a little bit today about how we're doing here in Connecticut. As Clarissa mentioned, I've only been here in this position for the last 2 years, so I certainly cannot claim credit for how well Connecticut is doing, but I'm very happy to be part of it now and to be a part of continuing to make progress and increasing participation, both summer lunch and summer breakfast. So just really quickly, as a brief overview of summer meals in Connecticut, I would say one of the biggest components to our success is the really high participation we have from our school food authorities to continue the meals that they offer during the school year into the summer months through either the seamless summer option of NSLP or through the summer food service program. I think one of the biggest challenges that we have is a low participation in the one rural county that we have. That's our kind of our quiet little corner. And then some of the most innovative practices that we have over the last summer or two are really surrounding farm-to-summer initiatives, and that's really been exciting for our sponsors as well as some community partners that have joined into summer meals through the VISTA program or through Food Corps and getting our younger community members involved in summer meals in terms of activities and nutrition education and those types of things. So specifically related to breakfast, I would say that really important to Connecticut's success is the very close partnership between the State Department of Education and End Hunger Connecticut, which is an anti-hunger advocacy organization here in Connecticut. They are really entrenched in the child nutrition programs and have made such a commitment to understanding the programs, to understanding the regulations that sponsors have to abide by, and really becoming very creative about implementation. So the close partnership allows both the State Department of Education and End Hunger Connecticut to provide technical assistance, and then it allows the State Department of Education to rely or to focus on compliance, and End Hunger Connecticut to really fill the advocacy role. So there are certain areas where we work very closely together, and then we each have kind of a separate area where we are able to focus on different needs of the sponsors that we're serving. So the commitment from both of those organizations to encourage and support participation in multiple child nutrition programs by each sponsor has been really successful. When we work with our sponsors, we're not just working with them on one program, so we're not just focused on National School Lunch Program or on the Summer Food Service Program or on Child and Adult Care Food Program. We're really looking at what are the characteristics of their community and how do they lend to participating in more than one or possibly all of the child nutrition programs, because there's so much overlap between the programs and how they can serve the needs of the community. We look at it really holistically, and I think that really has made it easier for sponsors to understand how they can participate in multiple programs and have it still be manageable. So I mentioned at the beginning that we have a really high school food authority participation in summer meals. We had this past summer in 2016, 68 summer meal sponsors between the Summer Food Service Program, the Seamless Summer Option, and through extension of the National School Lunch Program to schools that are serving academic summer school students. So out of 68 sponsors, 56 or 82% of those are school food authorities. And we think that makes a huge difference in terms of breakfast participation, because so many of those schools are already offering breakfast during the school year. It's very easy for them to transition to the summer months and still continue to provide multiple meal services, whether it's snack and lunch or breakfast and snack. Some of it is depending on programming that might be going on at that site during the day of what the best fit is for meal services, but it really makes it easier for the sponsors to continue to provide breakfast if they're already doing that during the school year. Another thing that's been really helpful for us has been the engagement of community partners. Several years ago, the National School Lunch Program team here at the State Department of Education, working with community partners, founded the Connecticut Breakfast Expansion Team to focus on districts that had a high need for breakfast but weren't currently serving it. And all of the partners on that committee really are committed to working with districts that are interested in serving breakfast but are having challenges with the logistics, whether it's staffing logistics or buy-in from administration or whatever the case may be. So this team really works on providing tools to districts to be able to make breakfast a reality during the school year. And we've reaped the benefits of that during the summer. So we also created last year the Summer Meals Outreach Committee, which is a similar committee of community partners that have a variety of skill sets, a variety of contacts in different fields that allow us to draw on those strengths and experience to be able to provide sponsors or potential sponsors with any support or resources that they may need to make breakfast a viable option for them in the summer. We also have two really explicit requests at the annual summer meals training that I think drive breakfast participation on the part of sponsors offering breakfast. So we talk about the fact that we really would like them to take advantage of the opportunity to serve two meals or snacks per day. So we had sponsors that are, you know, potentially providing lunch or one other meal service, depending on whether it's an association with programming and what timing of that programming might be. But we really ask them, if they're already serving, to consider serving twice. As Clarissa said, it makes it a little bit more financially viable for them if they're getting more reimbursement and, you know, not investing double in terms of staffing and food costs and things like that, if they can streamline their costs and really take advantage of the fact that they already have staffing to serve those two meals, it just gives them the extra reimbursement funds. And then the other thing that we've focused on is really asking them to be thoughtful in their expansion to new sites. We know that we work with our communities to find areas that are eligible for summer meal sites, but we want to look beyond just whether is the site eligible, but how successful is that site going to be? And we know it's so much easier to be successful with participation in our meals if we bring the meals to where the kids are, as opposed to trying to draw the kids to where the meals are. So we've been talking a lot in the last couple of annual trainings about how to network, how to talk with community partners to find out where are the kids in your community during the summer, who is providing opportunities for them, whether it's educational or recreational or any way that those kids are being drawn together, and how can you reach out to them to collaborate in terms of the meals, because we know that if the kids are there, they're going to participate. So we really have focused on that a lot, and I think that's made a big difference in our participation in both summer breakfast and summer lunch. So the advice that I would give to any sponsor or site that is thinking about adding breakfast but may be worried about the logistics is talk to the site staff. In the process of doing site visits and monitoring over the last couple of years, I've been really amazed and pleased to see the connections that site staff make with the kids and families that are coming to their sites. They know who's coming, they know where they live, they know when they're taking vacation, they know so much about the families because they're not just handing them meals, they're talking to them and they're learning about them and they're forming a connection. So if you can tap into the knowledge that your site staff has, it's going to better inform you of what the interests and needs are of the kids that are participating in your programs already. And it's also going to build staff buy-in. So when you have staff that is excited and interested and ready to take on new changes, it's always easier than if you're trying to convince the staff that it's a good idea. And I thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to hearing the ideas from some of the other states.
Thanks, Caroline. That was great. So just a reminder, we will save the questions for the end. But if you have any in the meantime, you can feel free to email them to me, chayes@frac.org. All right, so we are going to move on to our next speaker. And next up, we'll have Javier Pulido. Javier has managed the City of Seattle's Summer Food Service Program for the last 11 summers. Feeding thousands of kids each summer has been very rewarding to him, and he understands the importance of kids eating healthy meals and that impacts their daily lives. All right, Javier, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, and good morning from Seattle, but it would be good afternoon as we move on east, so good afternoon to you folks heading in that direction. I have been with the Summer Food Service Program with the City of Seattle for the last 10 years, or 11 summers, as Clarissa has already indicated. So any credit or failures, I accept both. And this is the first time that I've had the opportunity to share a little bit more about our program through here. So thank you very much for giving me and the City of Seattle the opportunity to share our own personal experiences. I know that when I've gone to different conferences related to the Summer Food Service Program in the past, it's always been interesting to hear the experiences that other organizations, cities, have had in running the Summer Food Service Program. And sometimes, you know, I've felt like a big fish in a little pond, and then, you know, I start hearing about things going on in New York or some other larger cities in the country, and I'm amazed at what people can do. But again, I can only speak to what we do here at the City of Seattle. And just an overview about our program, we are the largest sponsor in the state. So as a consequence, we get audited by the state every year. So that's something we enjoy. I'm good pals with them now. We have been a sponsor since the early 70s. This last year, in 2016, that concluded August 26th, for our 9-week program, we served 5,000 kids. So for some of you folks, that's going to sound like a lot. And for some of you, it may seem like, oh, only 5,000. And that totals a total of 241,476 total meals, including lunch, breakfast, and snack. Breakfast itself, we served almost 50,000 meals for the 9-week program. We had 109 sites, plus another 20 jumpstart programs in pre-existing sites. So ultimately, I like to say we had about 128 sites, but some of them were located in the same location, and so depending on how you want to parse that up. And 92 of the total sites were open, and 17 were closed. So that should give you a general idea of our program. And since we're focusing on breakfast, I'll break it down even further. Of the 109 sites, we had between 77 and 79 breakfast sites, and overwhelmingly, 70 of those were open, with only 6 being closed. And most of our breakfast sites were educational programs, but it included also community centers and low-income housing sites. But, you know, again, going back to the most important meal of the day, especially for an educational program, anything, of course, if you're doing any sort of activities, physical of any sort, it's always great to have food in your body. But of course, in order to learn and to retain what you're doing, breakfast is a great way to do that. And of course, I know I'm preaching to the choir, and I'm just having to restate the things that are obvious. We're a Monday through Friday program. I know that there are opportunities to do weekend things, and we did try that, but for us, especially for breakfast, that didn't seem to be a conducive thing. Just like Clarissa said, you know, who wants to get up early on Saturday morning just for the food? I think kids value sleep more than they do food, perhaps, although their body will argue that as well. Our vendor is the Seattle School District. They are a great partner in that as well because they know all about meal patterns for the National School Lunch Program, and they're very well equipped with their machines to do all those sorts of things. And also, we get the benefit of getting 4 of the district drivers to deliver to our different sites. They have the large refrigerated trucks that we rely on, and then we hire here at the City of Seattle 3 seasonal city drivers to deliver to the smaller sites. And the logistics associated with that, as Clarissa mentioned earlier as well, and it works for us, is that the current day's lunch is delivered with the following day's breakfast. Now, the big downside to that is that on the first day of any particular program, they will just not get breakfast for that day. There's not really an easy way for us to deliver it the previous week, especially if that program is not in existence until the week that we do that. So we prepare the sites to let them know that on the first day, they're going to have to provide their own breakfast or just not have breakfast at all. And obviously, the shorter the program is, if it's just a week program, that's already one-fifth of their the meals there, and that's kind of tough. But of course, for a program that goes the entire 9 weeks or close to it, you know, one day they usually can handle that. And then also to administer this program to make sure that the state and USDA is happy, we hire 6 monitors who are assigned up to 20 of the sites, lunch and breakfast sites or lunch and snack sites. And that has worked out pretty well for us. You know, the menu that we have with the Seattle School District for breakfast, it's a 2-week cycle, so 10 days of different meals. And 2 of the weeks usually has an assorted cold cereal of some sort. And the other 3 days of the week have anything from a cinnamon bun, a blueberry mini loaf, a whole grain bagel with cream cheese, a honey wheat breakfast bar, apple fruit pocket, or a whole grain maple waffle. Now, all of our meals are refrigerated and are not hot meals. So, you know, there, as I've already indicated, the volume that we do, it makes it very difficult to provide warmed up meals and that sort of thing. But one of the challenges that we found with lunch as well is that oftentimes kids just don't want to have their milk. So we wind up having a lot of wasted milk. Now for breakfast, on the days that we have cereal, that's 2 days a week, that's not usually an issue because milk goes very well with that. But the other days, it's a challenge sometimes, but it's, of course, offered to the kids to have the milk. For lunch, we provide chocolate milk and makes waste, it reduces the waste. But one thing, actually, as I was going over this just this morning, I was thinking, now, is that a USDA thing that for breakfast we can't have chocolate milk, or are we required to have only white milk for breakfast? So if someone can answer that for me a little bit later, that would be good. But it was just something that occurred to me that I've just done this for so long that I've always thought, white milk for breakfast, of course. But you folks can correct me if that's not the case. You know, this has been a great program. Kids have been fed, and as Caroline had mentioned, that you know, you want to get the meals where the kids already are, because when I first started this program, I thought, oh, we'll have meals and the kids will come. Especially at park sites, I thought that would be a given, but that's not the case. I have experienced that numbers go up at parks when there are already activities to do there. That just having swings, swing set, and slides and all that is not enough. So I think for all meals, including breakfast, that taking them where the kids already are. And in terms of when to have breakfast, one of the things that I'd like to add, in addition to the whole idea of kids not wanting to wake up in the morning, but sometimes if a program actually starts early, having it be the first thing is probably not the best idea, because kids will probably want to sleep in, and they said, oh, I can miss the breakfast, and then just go when things start at 9 rather than going at 8. So perhaps the requirement could be that the programming starts and the educational part starts at 8, and then perhaps they're there for an hour already, maybe take a break, have breakfast because everyone's going to be there, and then continue. There's a lot that can be said about just shifting meal times. Lunch, we could do the same thing, you know, having kids have activity, a recess type sort of thing, and then have lunch rather than have lunch be the last thing and having kids leave at that time. One thing that we've also done to promote the program is partnering with our local United Way, who help who helps us a lot in getting the word out for all meals, but certainly emphasizing breakfast as well, the most important meal, and have them do the outreach that may be necessary to get the word out. Additionally, working with our Parks Department, you know, helping us, having them do activities and getting the meals to where the kids already are. Now, for our program, though, for breakfast, we tend not to have breakfast at the park sites because it may be a bit too early. At least here in Seattle, you don't know what the weather's going to be like. Some of you folks with the nice weather, you know, you could probably have 70-degree weather already for breakfast. That's just not the case over here. But also, Seattle's not as bad as people think, just so you know. Okay, we've had a lot of nice weather. But anyway, that in a nutshell, I could go on and on and on, but that in a nutshell is our program and how it's operated for us and my personal experience with it for the last 11 summers. I look forward to hearing any questions at the end of this session, and I'll turn this back over to Clarissa. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Thanks, Javier. I really like that idea of kind of having programs do some kind of activity first and then maybe pushing breakfast back a little bit. And when we were talking to sponsors for our report, we definitely found that the colder option is definitely better for breakfast, and then doing that warm lunch works pretty well. So thank you for joining us today and sharing your expertise. All right, so we are going to go ahead and move to our last but not least speaker. We're going to hear from Janine Russell. Janine is Assistant Food Service Director for Colorado Springs School District 11. Janine?
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to everyone, because summer food service is certainly a passion of mine. I've been doing this for the past 9 years. Just a little bit of background about School District 11. We call it the shortened down version versus Colorado Springs School District 11. We have 62 sites that we serve meals at, approximately 27,000 students, and we have an FRL of about 53%. So last summer for our summer food service program, I had 33 sites, and that was a combination of school sites, community centers, and mobile sites, because we do a big mobile program where we actually take food to the kids instead of having them come to us. Last year we served about 16,400 breakfasts and about 50,000 lunches to students. My hat's off to Seattle. That's a big program, but we're just a school district. And we operated from about June 1 to August 1. So I have a central kitchen, so I do have the capability of a distribution system, which allows us to do that mobile program I alluded to. But at our school location, certainly the food is prepped right there. My staff comes from our current food service staff during the school year, and we have a 4-week menu cycle. And Monday through Friday, we do serve breakfast with a hot entree selection and a cold selection every day. When we have looked at where we want to do our programs, I think there's three key things to hone in on when determining if, where, and when you want to have a summer food service breakfast program. As other people have mentioned, location is really important, especially if it's not at a school. It's got to be easily accessible for walking students, especially if there's no bus program available at all. If they have to walk a long distance, they're just not going to come. And so given that, we have done a couple of mobile breakfast programs where, again, we took the meals to children at apartment buildings and trailer courts. The challenge with that is certainly your availability of a delivery system, because you're taking meals that are already prepped there, and we have done hot meals via our mobile system and certainly the staff to do it with. The second key point is programs, as everybody has mentioned, is really important, because if you don't have anything other than the meal, children just may not decide to come on a regular basis. So for me, forming those partnerships was absolutely crucial. One of the things that we have done is we like to promote not only feeding the tummy, but certainly feeding the brain. And so from our regular school district staff, I have solicited gently used books that are applicable to elementary age, and then I collect those all year long, and we give away all of those books at our sites. If a child shows up one day, they get a free book that they get to choose. So with that, then I've reached out to grandparents, getting grandparents to come in to our sites and read to children while they're eating. That's gone over very well. Certainly I've made connections with the local library for them to come in and put on a program. Reach out to your zoos if you have a local zoo. Churches have been a wealth of help to me. They've come in and done craft days, cooking matters classes, game days. Certainly consider looking at big vocational Bible schools. I don't know about your area, but in my area, almost every church has one. And it's usually, you know, a four-hour session, so you could check with them about, hey, can I come in and do a breakfast program, and can I come in and do a lunch program for you? And most of them are quite delighted with that. So certainly, as other people have mentioned, you hear reoccurring things about location, programs, time. If there's no school activity such as summer school or an enrichment program, set your breakfast time later. The kids just do not get up early. I think our breakfast times were about 9 a.m., and that went over pretty decent. Again, I'm still looking to increase my breakfast programs because, as you heard, 16,000 compared to 50,000, not very good. But it's far better than what we used to do here in School District 11, because I know when I started 9 years ago, we only had seven sites. So we've grown, and we've worked really hard to develop those partnerships, as I've mentioned, because that's helped us be successful. So I welcome any questions, and again, thank you for the time to talk to you about our program. We're pretty proud of what we do here in Colorado Springs.
Wonderful. Thanks, Janine, for those examples of partnerships. That's really great. So we are going to go ahead and open up the lines for questions or comments. If you have found success with implementing breakfast or you have a really great breakfast program you'd like to talk about, feel free. And again, if you'd rather email me your question, you can do so at chayes@frac.org.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
All right, so the lines are now open for questions and comments for our speakers today.
Hi, my name is Michelle from Lawrence County Community Action. And I had a question for the speaker from Colorado Springs who was just speaking. You mentioned that you are doing your mobile route, because we have a mobile route as well, but that you are serving hot meals, hot breakfast. And I was wondering, how are you working through, what are you utilizing to work through keeping the meals hot? What type of equipment do you use for that?
Hi, that's a great question. And I have worked with our local health department, and that is crucial in order to make sure that you're complying with all regulations. We've gotten really creative about what we do because some of my trucks are refrigerated, some of my trucks are not, but I have taken like Cambro warmers, and what we have done is gone to a hardware store, gotten 4-inch thick bricks, wrapped them in foil. Then they go right into the oven first thing in the morning. We heat those things up. There's probably 4 bricks that we put onto a sheet pan. It's the bottom, and then we put that sheet pan in the bottom of the warmer, and it does. It keeps our food to 140 degrees or higher.
Oh, wow.
You just get creative if you don't have the ability to have a warmer that you can plug into a generator. But again, my local health department has approved that method, and they're just happy because they
Thank you for
the food
holding.
It comes out hot.
Okay, thank you so much. That's very helpful.
You're welcome.
All right, and this is just a reminder, if you are not asking questions, just to self-mute yourself so we can hear the other questions that are coming through.
My name is Andrew Porter with the Hall Hunger Initiative in Dayton, Ohio. I was just wondering, this is kind of for everyone, I've heard issues about, due to regulations, parents go to a summer feeding center, not be able to eat because the regulations only allow children to eat, and so I was wondering if that was something, an issue you faced.
Do any of our speakers want to talk about maybe innovative ways to have parents come to sites and be able to provide meals? One thing that we've actually heard just to start the conversation is, because we've definitely heard how it's hard for sometimes children to sites, and then if parents have to bring the children and then wait, it can be kind of a tough situation. So partnering with a food bank or a food pantry who can maybe do a food drop at the same time is something that we've heard come up quite a bit. And then also, it's not an immediate solution, but we've heard of anti-hunger organizations that work with SNAP offices and people who fill out SNAP applications to be on site to have that information available. So those are two of the solutions that we've heard, and I don't know if any of our speakers have run into that at all.
Hi, this is Caroline in Connecticut, and parent participation is certainly something that we have heard of as a barrier for our sites. And our sponsors have approached it in a variety of ways. Many of our sponsors have found other funding, either through local or through national grants, to be able to provide parent meals. We do have some sponsors who will sell parent meals at a very low cost just to ensure that they're not, they're offsetting the expenses of the food and the staffing to make sure that they're not subsidizing the cost of parent meals through their federal reimbursements for the children's meals. We have some partnerships that sponsors have with local churches. If the local church is the site where the church will choose to pay for the parent meals so that the parents can still eat with their kids. And we have some sites where they just do a lot of outreach with the community and education where the parents know, they can bring their breakfast with them and sit and eat with the kids. And that way, there's not that discomfort or that anxiety or they're not pushing the kids to eat faster so they can leave, but they can still eat as a family.
And this is Javier from the City of Seattle, and we found that to be a challenge as well. So as a general rule, we do not serve meals to adults. However, we have had a few exceptions, and for a few years when we've actually done a kickoff event at the beginning of the season, and again, it wasn't like for an ongoing reason to have the parents eat with the kids, but for us it was more, oftentimes meals prepared by school districts get a bad rap. And so for us, it's kind of a promotional thing. It's like, we are so confident that our food is so good for your kids, we're going to let you eat these meals as well. So they could see that they're actually pretty good, decent meals. So again, that's not as an ongoing thing. But then also this past summer, in partnership with United Way, United Way had some special events that they would have once a week on Wednesdays. And at those sites, adults were also allowed to eat the meals with their kids, again, to promote good meals that we're serving and as well as to feed the parents. But also just record keeping can be a challenge with that as well. Just making sure that the Summer Food Service Program, which is designed and meant for kids, only the kids are eating those meals and being tracked that way. So I would imagine that even with these other options of using other funding, there could be challenges of making sure that the pots of money are kept where they're supposed to be and that none of the programs are violating their funding funders. So anyway, that's our perspective of how we incorporate adult meals.
Hi, and this is Janine from Colorado Springs again. I do have firsthand experience with feeding adults in our program. One summer we did have a nonprofit organization provide funding for adults for the entire month of, I think it was July. And as Javier mentioned, yes, you have to have very good records to make sure that you have one set of counts for your adults and certainly the other set of counts for your summer food service program. But what I have found out in keeping tabulation, because actually this did happen a second year for us because we were, I don't know if anybody heard about our big fires we've had, but one summer we had a huge fire, and so then Red Cross and some other agencies came in and said, feed adults. So what we discovered is when you have the ability to provide meals to adults along with children, the counts for our children just almost doubled. So it was pretty dramatic because adults are coming, they're driving, and then their child eats, they eat. So that was really a great program and something I hope that USDA considers in your, you know, areas that have a very high free and reduced percentage.
Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
All right. So we did have a couple of questions come over email, so I'll go ahead and ask those and then give folks on the line a couple of minutes to think of any other questions they want to ask our speakers. But this question I think is for Javier and Janine, and the question is, can the speaker share more examples from their breakfast menus?
Hi, it's Janine. So some of the things that Javier was doing, like the cinnamon rolls, yes, we do those, but we did what's known as kind of like an egg McMuffin sandwich. Certainly it's the muffin, ham or sausage, cheese, and egg with it. We also have done pancakes. We do mini pancakes. We've done, scrambled eggs. We've done a lot of different things, and here's my breakfast menu. I was trying to, so we've done biscuits with sausage gravy, breakfast burritos. We've done yogurt and animal crackers, so strawberry pancakes, and breakfast pizza. So there's a variety of things that we do, and I will tell you that when we have the hot lunches versus like yogurt and animal crackers or just cereal is offered every day at all our locations, but the hot breakfast is what brings the kids in.
This is Javier again, and again, I did mention basically the other items that we have, a cinnamon bun, blueberry mini loaf, whole grain bagel with cream cheese, whole grain maple waffle, apple fruit pocket, honey wheat breakfast bar. Now, the waffle, it's not intended to be warmed up and all that. That's kind of a downside to it, but it still tastes good. I hear this, you folks talking about hot meals and how that draws people in. I wish we could do that, but we're currently not set up to do something like that. But maybe that's something we could pursue in the future. But anyway, that's essentially how we have it there. And again, out of the 10-day cycle, we have 4 days where we have cereal.
Great, thanks. So I will, again, open it up for any questions from anyone on the phone.
I'm just wondering, are you staying away from nuts and seeds specifically due to allergy concerns? I'm also not hearing much about fruits involved. So in terms of nutritional value, are there efforts, perhaps barriers, to including such items?
Hi, it's Janine. We haven't specifically stayed away from nuts. We don't offer very many of them. And we, in addition to the hot or cold entree that's offered every day, and by the way, I should clarify that if we do a mobile breakfast program, there's just one entree that day. The kids only have the one choice. But they have choices of the side items in order to meet, you know, your components and things like that. So we always do offer fruits, whether it's canned fruit, fresh fruit. So they do have a variety to select from, because we also do what's known as offer versus serve. So children get to select what they have for their meal. If we're going to an area we have no knowledge of, such as a mobile site, then yeah, we are going to stay away from, you know, nuts and things like that, because we certainly don't want to have any allergic reactions with children.
And this is Javier from the City of Seattle, and we do completely stay away from nuts for all of our meals for that very reason. Now, with fruit in the morning for breakfast, unfortunately, I can't say that we do very well in that area. We have 100% fruit juice, but of course I know that's not the same thing. But in our defense, during lunch, we do have a lot of fruit, and we do kiwis, apples, fresh vegetables as well, peaches, things of that nature. So what we lack at breakfast, I think we make up at lunch, and as I mentioned, all sites that serve breakfast will also serve lunch.
Hi, this is Caroline from Connecticut, and being at the state agency, I'm not the one planning the meals, although I do approve all the menus in advance of the season. We don't have a lot of sponsors that use nuts, but we do have a lot of sponsors that will use soy butter instead of peanut butter, and we have a lot of sponsors that will incorporate sunflower seeds. So we do have a variety, especially of alternate meals that might be a yogurt and a cheese stick, and it might have sunflower seeds, or they might have a day where they offer a yogurt and a soy butter sandwich.
Great. Thanks, everyone. All right. So I'm going to give folks a couple more minutes for any last lingering questions. And you can always feel free to reach out to me after the call, and I can put you on with speakers if you have any follow-up questions. But I just wanted to give a quick reminder that today's call will be on frac.org, and our newsletter will include our breakfast report, any resources mentioned, and then registration links for our future calls. And our call next month is going to be on November 3rd, and it's going to be on reducing food waste and serving kid-friendly meals. Definitely feel free to check that out. And last call for questions.
Now, this is Javier at the City of Seattle again, and I'm going to mention one thing that I'm sure it probably doesn't need to be said, but I want to say it anyhow. As I was just reflecting here that our fruit is lacking for breakfast. One thing, of course, that is a hard thing to balance is that, of course, with your meals, whether it be breakfast, lunch, or snack, the cost is increased. And, we get the reimbursement from USDA, but it's, I don't know how it is with other folks, but it doesn't cover all of our costs, and we have to dip into other funding sources in order to do that. So anyway, I just wanted to call that to everyone's attention, though I think it didn't need to be said.
Thanks, Javier. All right. So, sorry to hear a little bit of background noise. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap up the call. Thank you to our speakers for joining us today and sharing your wonderful expertise around breakfast during the summer. And everyone else, thank you for joining. Have a great rest of your day.